This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special episode of the 1973 podcast. We're here with NHL alumni Dan Locatore, and we're going to talk shop. We're going to go through the career. We're going to tell stories. We're going to chirp, and we're going to get it really going. And can't emphasize enough, before we went on, I told Dan how happy we are to have him. Long overdue. We've been moving some stuff around to get us together, so we're happy to finally get him on. So, Dan, why don't you first, before we start talking, and we have a mutual friend, Doug Smith.
Yes, who, we do.
We had on, and he was great. Didn't know what to expect. We kind of didn't really talk too much before we had him on, and had great interaction with him. He had some fantastic stories, and he said to mention him when we had you on, and so I'm mentioning him before we get rolling. So just tell us about Doug with your connection.
Yeah, Dougie's the best. I met him, the first time I met him was during the lockout. I demoted myself to the minors. I wasn't interested in going overseas like the rest of the guys. I got a call from, the head of player personnel in Boston, Sean Cody. And I think it was like November. And, he wanted me to go to Providence. And I'm like, I worked my tail off, to get myself out of the minors to get to the NHL, And I'd already been up now for about four straight years and in the NHL. But he's like, it's not gonna be good for you to take the time off, all year. How's that gonna be for you, after the lockout? And so I thought about it, and I just commuted from Cape Cod to Providence and played, for the Providence Bruins, and that's how I met Dougie. And man, great guy. He was working a lot with Colton Orr. Colton Orr was there. I worked with him some too. And then as the season went on, worked with him some more and got to really know him. And, he was around Boston the following year. I ended up signing with the Bruins. Wouldn't you know it, I ended up starting the year in Switzerland where I didn't want to be overseas the year before, but that's where I started, Dougie was around, and he still loves talking about, some of my fights, in Boston. And, I see him at a lot of the Bruin alumni games now, and, he's just such a really good person. Besides, his fighting knowledge, the guy donated a kidney, and I'm not sure if you guys know that, but.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about a great person and a human being. And, I don't know how many people, would step up and do that for somebody else. And, he's just an amazing guy. And, I'm happy to call him a friend, and I'm lucky to call him a friend. So.
Yeah. He's been nothing but, great to us, like post, having him on. And, he's kind of like the guy that opened the door for a lot of our interviews going forward. We talk all the time. And every time I get a podcast, a new one, I'll send it to him and he'll shoot it around to, you know, his circle. And yeah, he's just nothing but good things about him. And we'd love to have him on again eventually and maybe do like a, you know, a bunch of guests on that all kind of were ex-NHL guys and kind of chirp around a little bit. So, but before we get going, we're here to talk to you. So we'll have to put a pin in Doug for a little bit. And I gotta ask, because we're around the same age, what was hockey like growing up in Massachusetts when, for people that don't know?
Well, I mean, you know, hockey, you know, even back then was, you know, really big and popular, and you know, it wasn't the amount of travel teams that, you know, there are today. I mean, it just seems like, you know, there's a million different money-making organizations out there. You know, when I was a kid, you play for your town team, and then you try it out for, like, the Middlesex Braves or the, you know, the Mini Bruins. And, you know, that's who I played for was the Mini Bruins. And but, you know, you didn't have all these travel teams that you do now. I mean, it's just like, you know, you make your head explode trying to decide which team you're going to have your kid play for. And it's like, you know, is it the right team, the wrong team? You know, like, it's, I don't know how some of these parents do it, but, you know, for me living on the Cape, you know, it's been a heck of a lot of driving over the years, you know, for my son, bringing him to, you know, the Breakers, the Bay State Breakers, and then over to the Bridgewater Bandits. But, yeah, growing up, I mean, like I said, you know, you play for your town team, and then, you know, if you were lucky enough to make, you know, Middlesex Braves or the Boston Mini Bruins, and, you know, went on to, you know, play in the Pee Wee tournament up in Quebec. And, you know, that was such a, you know, experience, because my two older brothers, you know, did that before me. My oldest brother played for the Mini Bruins, and then my other brother played for the Middlesex Braves. And, you know, I just remember being a kid going up to Quebec City for that tournament. And it's obviously something I, you know, as a kid, I wanted to, you know, get on that team to get up to Quebec. And, you know, so, you know, I worked hard by just playing outside. You know, it wasn't like I was doing, you know, weightlifting or anything at age 12. You know, I played in the neighborhood nonstop until my mother yelled at the top of her lungs for me to come in. And basically they had to drag me in. And, you know, I was building tree forts, and, you know, I was a kid, and I loved it. Like, I would, you know, I would go to sleep at nighttime dreaming about, you know, building my next tree fort, you know. And I dream about, like, you know, getting, like, a Saturday street hockey game going, like an all-day game, you know. And if we couldn't do it Saturday and Sunday, like, if we couldn't get enough kids to commit, I'd be, like, so devastated. Because I was like, why don't you guys want to do this, you know? Like, it was like my Stanley Cup, you know, as a kid, to be able to play street hockey on the weekends. So, you know, I didn't want to go to school. Like, it was honestly a daily job and project for my mom to get me dressed to go to school. Like, I would throw my play clothes on and be ready to go outside and play or build my tree for it. And she'd be like, you have to go to school. I'm like, I don't want to go to school. I just want to play, you know?
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blast tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday, good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
So,
Dan, at what point in time when you were a kid did the NHL seem that it was going to happen? What, when did it really click in that you had a path going that route?
I think when I made the U.S. under 17 team, with a broken ankle. So I made it all the way out to Colorado, and on the very last day, I broke my ankle, my growth plate in my left ankle. And I just remember calling home and telling them that, you know, I had broken my ankle, and, you know, like myself and my family, you know, my older brothers, they thought that was it for me. And I just remember them calling my name, and I was the last person they called because obviously I was injured. And the tournament, you know, obviously at that time wasn't until day after Christmas. So I just remember calling back home that night. It was probably like 11:30 back here, Boston time. And, I woke everybody up. My brother answered, and I just remember him yelling to the rest of the house because he happened to be at home and my parents. And he's like, Danny made it. Danny made it. And, you know, I just remember there was a big article in the Middlesex News. And at that point, I realized that, you know, I wasn't, you know, a little fish in a big ocean, you know. I realized, you know, that I was at, you know, the top for my age group for the 1977 birth year. You know, I just made the U.S. under 17 team. You know, the only kid from Massachusetts to make it, and you know, out of all the kids in the country that tried out, and I was like, wow, this is real, you know. And after that point, you know, we had people coming in from, you know, everywhere, USHL, the Quebec Major League, the OHL, the WHL, just coming to Natick, to the house and trying to get me to go to whatever team they were coming in from.
The, being drafted 29th overall, that must have been pretty awesome feeling, even drafted higher than Chara. That's incredible.
Well, I'll never forget. It was me, JP Dumont, and Chara posing for a picture in the Islanders, draft room down in St. Louis. And I just remember looking at Chara at the time, well, looking up at him, and I was like, holy, I just remember saying to him, like, you're a big bastard, you know, like, he wasn't really speaking, you know, very good English at that point, you know. But yeah, you just never know how certain careers are gonna, you know, which team, you know. And I look back at my career, like, you know, it's just it was unfortunate that I got traded from Pittsburgh, you know, because I had found a home there and they were allowing me to play. And, you get traded, you get on to certain teams, and your path takes a different career. And it's, you know, one of the things that haunts me to this day, you know, because I know the player that I was and why I got drafted. And, you know, it's just certain teams I got on, you know, lack of minutes, you know, trying to justify my paycheck and, you know, going out and fighting certain guys. And that's, you know, that wasn't why I got drafted. You know, I got drafted because I could skate and score. And, but yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was a pretty good draft class by the, the Islanders. You know, they had three picks in the first two rounds. So, but yeah, it's obviously, as everybody in Boston knows, it really worked out for Chara.
Well, speaking of former Bruins, the very first goal that you scored was against somebody I guess you play with on the alumni, right? Andrew Raycroft?
Yeah, Razor. he's a funny bastard. My very first NHL goal in Edmonton, against the Boston Bruins, and Razor was in net, and sometimes I still bust his balls. If he tries giving me a hard time in the locker room, I'm like, Razor, just remind me, who was my first NHL goal off of? You know.
Did you tell him you still have the puck at home just to chirp him?
Well, you know what? on the move, I was in Pittsburgh for 2 years, and then going into my third year, I bought a brand new house, my first house ever. And then obviously, as a lot of players will tell you, that as soon as you buy a house in the city that you're playing in, it's a kiss of death. 5 months later, I was traded to New York. But when I bought a home here on Cape Cod as a permanent basis, I was like, I'm not buying a house ever again wherever I play. Someone stole that puck.
No.
I didn't realize it until, you know, I mean, it took me a while to unpack. And I didn't realize it for some time. Like, I'm like, where the hell is my, you know, the Edmonton plaque with my puck, you know? Yeah, someone stole it on it. I don't know. Yeah.
You sure it wasn't Razor?
Nah. Maybe.
I would accuse him first and then let him backtalk around it. So, Tom, you got a question for Dan?
Yeah, we've talked to a few guys for the podcast, and they've all talked about their welcome to the NHL moment. Did you have one of those moments on the ice?
Yeah, it's actually on it's on the wall here. Well, I'll bring the camera over. the glass, the picture fell, but can you guys see that?
Yes.
That's against Dallas Drake.
Oh, yep.
With the Phoenix Coyotes. I had gotten called up that year, towards the end of that year. Because they were going to have me around for the playoffs. And that was the game that he ran over Boyd Devereaux. And Boyd was... He was, I don't know, he missed the rest of that year. I think he might even miss most of the next year. He was never the same. I mean, he was Edmonton's number one draft pick. And so the next time Dallas Drake was out on the ice, it was me, Chad Kilger, and George LaRocque. And, you know, he's not going to fight George LaRocque. So, you know, I mean, so I said to Dallas, I'm like, we're going to go. And he's like, no, we're not. I'm like, yeah.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Yes, we are, you know. And, you know, Kevin Lowe was the coach that year before, you know, next year before he became GM. And, you know, he put us out there and, you know, he didn't have to say anything. I mean, he knew who he was putting out there and, you know, it was three big guys. I mean, Kilger was he was bigger than me. I mean, I'm 6'3". He was like 6'4", 6'4 and a half. And then George was like 6'5". And, but, you know, I just knew that was the moment, you know, to make a name, and to get respect from my teammates and for people around the league too. And so, you know, he and I went at it and I buried him to the ice, you know, I beat him down and that's what it says in that article. You know, I said it felt good beating him down for Boydie, you know. And, you know, my coach, you know, Kevin Lowe was real happy and proud of me. And, you know, so, yeah, it felt like scoring. It felt like my first NHL goal in that moment, you know. So,
Eddie, question for Dan.
Sure, Dan. Dan, I ask everybody that comes on, what was your favorite building to play in?
Well, the building that I seemed, for whatever reason, it wasn't the nicest looking building, but I always seemed to like have my best games there was the HP Pavilion. I don't think it's called that anymore, but out in San Jose. You know, even when our whole team, we all got food poisoning there one year or one game there when I was with Pittsburgh. And I still ended up like with like two goals that night. And I don't know, like it just, every time I played there, I always seemed to score, have a fight or whatever, you know, I always seemed to have like the happy legs, you know, in that building. And then, I don't know, another building I used to like to play in was Tampa for some reason. Always seemed to have good games there. And Pittsburgh. I for whatever reason, I loved playing in Pittsburgh before I played there. And then once I played there, I just loved it. Loved the igloo, loved the ice. And then, you know, probably my least favorite place to go to was Buffalo. So... I'm sure a lot of guys say that, but, you know.
Dan, out of all the teams that you played for, was it Pittsburgh that felt the most like home in the NHL for you?
Yeah. I was really bummed out and, like, I think, like, depressed when I got traded from there. Like, you know, I know a lot of guys would be super excited to go to New York and the Big Apple and that whole life and lifestyle and – But I was devastated, you know, because, you know, a lot of the fans there really liked me and I liked them and, you know, I loved going to like, you know, the grocery store or to the mall and, you know, I loved interacting with the fans and, you know, it's just a blue collar town and, you know, reminded me of Boston in a lot of ways. But I was like left alone as far as, you know, you know, not too many distractions. But, you know, I love Pittsburgh, you know. You know, I wish I played my entire career there, you know. I mean, obviously I love playing for my hometown in Boston. But, you know, it was hard playing here, you know, because you got people, you know, I think text messaging just started happening then. And, you know, you got people texting you like, you know, leave passes or get tickets. And, you know, it was a lot of distractions going into each game at home. And, but I mean, obviously it was like the biggest thrill and honor for me to play for my hometown, you know? So, but no, Pittsburgh was definitely my favorite place to play.
Tom, you got a question for Dan?
Yeah, he actually kind of just answered it, but being from Massachusetts, did you put any extra pressure on yourself? Or do you think there was extra pressure put on you for playing for your hometown team?
A little bit. I mean, maybe at first, I know my very first home game with the Bruins, you know, as a Bruin in the Garden, you know, I scored off Hasek and, you know, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, maybe at first, but then, you know, as the season went on, it just felt like I was playing it like anywhere else, you know, because it's a business, you know. And, you know, after I guess maybe the first little bit, you know, it felt like, you know, I was playing anywhere else in the country. So.
Ed, question for Dan.
Sure, Dan. Dan, who is your favorite roommate on the road and, you know, just – any good stories with that particular person that you can share that's not, you know, it doesn't match the limitations and whatnot?
Well, the majority of my roommates were the two guys who were the majority of my roommates, because I play with them on two different teams, were Tom Pody and Wayne Primo. So Pody and I played together in Edmonton and New York. And then Primo and I played together in Pittsburgh and Boston together. So it just so happened that both those guys were my roommates the majority of the time. You know, when I first got traded to Pittsburgh, before I was roommates with Primo, I was roommates with Garth Snow. And, I guess he was my roommate. Like, he'd come in, I don't know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, like even the night before a game. And I'm like, that's kind of like Billy Guerin. Billy Guerin was a guy that could, you know, he could go both ends and still show up and have a great game. You know, I don't know how some of those guys could do that, but Primo and I, you know, were a lot alike. We shared a lot of funny stories. We loved caving it up, meaning like we get into the city and like order room service and like watch a movie. And, I remember he and I watched Rounders one night, and he would laugh at certain stuff, and like, you know, and the way he got laughing just gave me like the giggles. And I don't know, he was a great roommate, and Tommy was too. But you know, Primo and I had a lot of laughs together, and two really good guys.
Dan, I got to ask you, because you were known for having some really good fights, but who was the toughest guy in your opinion that you ever went toe-to-toe with?
Well, I fought, I'm sure Dougie told you guys, but I mean, you know, I fought Ty Domi 4 or 5 times, but, you know, God rest his soul, you know, he was a teammate of mine in New York, was Chris Simon. Chris and I fought twice. Once when I was with Pittsburgh and he was with the Washington Capitals. That was before we were teammates. And then once over in Russia. Actually, the game was in Kazakhstan for the team I was playing on. It was a Donnybrook at the end of the game. And Chiefy went after one of my teammates. And so, obviously, I went in and, you know, got him off my teammate. And so Chris and I were going at it. And, Chris Simon's one of the toughest guys I fought because, I mean, I hit him so hard 3 or 4 times directly into his head. And he came back with a right hook. He wasn't even fazed by my punches, you know? Obviously Ty Domi was one of the most feared fighters in the league, of all time, besides Bob Probert. And, I almost, you know, as a kid, you know, when I started, you know, 20 years old in Hamilton, Ontario, just, you know, 35, 40 minutes south of Toronto, and Ty's in Toronto. And, you know, I'm watching, you know, we get all the Toronto, you know, news and everything. And, I almost didn't want to go into the NHL because of that maniac, you know? And then here it is, like this, you know, I'm in Pittsburgh, and this guy that wants to do is start fighting me. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Like, you know, so we just ended up fighting a lot. You know, he just, for whatever reason, just, you know, wanted to fight me all the time. And, you know, me being the kind of guy I am, and, you know, I just never said no to anybody, you know. Even going out for that shift at the end of the game there in Boston, you know, because we had a home and home in Toronto right before Christmas. And, you know, we're winning the game 3 or 4 to 1, and there's 12 seconds left, and Mike Sullivan puts our line out there and tells me, as I'm halfway over the boards, "Lack, no bullshit." And I look back at him, and then I look on the ice because Ty Domi was playing left wing that game, but now he's lined up on the right wing. So I look at Sully, and I look at, you know, I give my eyes out on the ice of who I'm going out lining up against. And I look back at him and I shrug my shoulders. And what am I going to do? Go out and in front of 18,000 people and not do anything? No. So am I going to have one person pissed off of me or 18,000 people pissed off of me? So I chose to have one person who's my coach pissed off at me. So And I don't know why. I mean, he should have put, you know, Berge's line out there or somebody else's line out there that, you know, Ty Domi's not going to fight Patrice Bergeron, you know, or someone like Marco Sturm or somebody. I mean, you know, so. But go ahead.
You got, sorry.
Was there a particular coach who had a lasting impact on your career, do you think?
I mean, when I got, like I said, when Kevin Lowe was really good to me. You know, I only got to play parts of that season when he was coaching in Edmonton. And then my first full season up there, he was the general manager, and, you know, Craig McTavish, I mean, he didn't do me any favors, nor did he do any other Boston guy any favors up there. I mean, every Boston guy got traded that year. You know, I don't know if it was if he was paranoid about, you know, what happened to him when he was here. I have no idea, but every guy got traded that year that was from Boston. Me, Pody, Guerin, Mike Greer, everybody, you know. But, you know, when I got to Pittsburgh, you know, Ivan Hlinka, God rest his soul, you know, he was really good to me. You know, I mean, I was one of the few guys on the team that was not a Checo, and you know, he was really good to me. And then, you know, the beginning of the next year, he got fired. Rick Keogh took over, and Chico was he was really good to me. You know, those guys were good to me, and you know, I really appreciate it. Obviously, when I was in New York, Terry O'Reilly was the assistant coach there, and obviously Taz was. You know, I wish he was the head coach there, because that team would have been. That's exactly what that team needed, was Terry O'Reilly as the head coach, because you had 18, you know, individuals, you know, because you had 18 all-stars that got brought into that team to win the cup that year, and. But they were, it was just basically 18 individuals on that team. But, you know, I really, you know, watching the game now, you know, I really wish I came in the league like 10 years later, you know. And I really wish I could play for a guy like Rod Brendamore, you know. Or, you know, even like a guy like Paul Maurice, what's his name from he just got fired from I'm drawing a blank from Dallas.
Pete DeBeer?
Pete DeBoer. I remember talking to Pete around 2008 when I was before I, you know, I got the tryout with Carolina, but I remember talking to him. I think he was with Florida, and I had a really nice conversation with him, and you know, he another guy that, you know, I would like to have played for in my career, you know. So, yeah, so.
Ed, question for Dan.
Yeah, Dan, I'm going to ask you, when we talked to Andre Lacroix, he kind of mentioned kind of something which you just kind of barely, you kind of just touched on. Do you feel like that there's a lot of retreads in coaching in the NHL, and do you feel like that there should be some more new blood that kind of gets reintroduced on a regular basis to kind of maybe kind of shake it up a bit?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, some of these guys, you know, who have, you know, more than nine lives, you know, I mean, obviously they're good coaches. I mean, you know, they've coached, you know, some Stanley Cup teams, and, and now it's just, I don't know, maybe it's just a generation, you know, because even like when I came through, you know, even if you had an old school guy, like the game was still, the mindset was still pretty old school, you know. You know, when I look at the game now, it just seems like a big contrast, you know. It just seems totally different. You know, obviously there's less fighting, but the mentality just, it's, I don't know, it just seems, everything just seems different. I'm not sure what it's like on a day-to-day basis. You know, how they travel. I mean, everything is just, you know, every team's got their own practice rink and state-of-the-art this, state-of-the-art that. And yeah, I don't know. I think new blood. You know, it just seems like there's a lot of guys like from my generation that are now either coaching or even some guys who are a little bit older than me, like, you know, guys like Billy Guerin and Tom Fitzgerald and those guys.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
You know, the general managers now, and you know, I think that's good. You know, I think it's good for the game.
Dan, what we talk about on the podcast all the time, that the enforcer role is kind of gone away. And me personally, I'm not a fan of that, because I think that there's still a role for those character guys, and they're some of the most likable guys if you ever run into them as fans. Your thoughts on the kind of end of the enforcer and more of the pest player now, which is really a, you know, a thing, the enforcer role, those were character guys. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a difference between like certain enforcers that couldn't play the game. You know, I don't think that's good for the game. You know, guys that couldn't skate, that were just there, you know, I think the enforcer, where you have a heavyweight fighter that can also, like a guy like Chris Simon, you know, he's a heavyweight fighter, but, you know, didn't he score 50 goals 1 year with Washington? I mean, he's a guy that, and that was in like a, like current era, as far as like, you know, goal, like good goalies with big pads and, you know, that, you know, even like Donald Brashear, I mean, you know, I mean, he could, you know, guys give him a hard time or whatever, but like, I mean, talk about a guy that could fight, but I mean, he could still, you know, he could still get around and play and score goals, you know? But you know, you look at the Four Nations Cup, and you know, I don't know where you guys live, but I know where I live here on the Cape. Everybody was buzzing about that game in Montreal. I mean,
even Florida.
You know, like the puck drops and there's two fights going on right off the bat. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's one fight, and then immediately right afterwards, there's another fight. And And I was like, you know, air punching. Like, I was fired up. And I know that every hockey fan was fired up. Mm-hmm. And I know that social media was buzzing. I know the network ratings had to be through the roof. And, I think it's a mistake if hockey, you know, eliminates that, you know. I think it's good for the game. I think it's great for the fans, and I think it's, like I said, I think it's great for the game, because it gives you that adrenaline rush that, you know, it's a high that, you know, you just, it's hard to explain. I mean, it's kind of like scoring a game winning goal, but like it's just such a high and a rush. You know, when you're done with that fight and you're going to that box and you're sitting there, I mean, you are on a high that is just, it's a great feeling. So, you know, it gets your teammates going, it gets the crowd going. You know, I think it's good for the game, and I think it should stay. And you know, they shouldn't be filtering these guys out. You know, so
Tom, Question for Dan.
Yeah, I asked Doug this question. I'll ask you, what went through your mind before every fight? Was there anything that was in your head before you started to fight, or did you just like go into another zone?
I hated stage fighting. You know, I hated game days, whereas like, you know, if I wasn't playing much, I knew that we were playing such and such team, and that, you know, excuse my language here, but that idiot on the other team was, you know, gonna, you know, he was gonna be looking to fight me because, you know, if one of my teammates, you know, was injured, like let's say I was in New York and, you know, a guy like Dale Puranin's injured or something, and yeah, I know, you know, the idiot on the other team is gonna be looking for me, you know. And that's a guy that is, you know, can't play the game. And, you know, I always love the fights in the spur of the moment, you know, like it just happens. Like either somebody hit my teammate the wrong way and I'm going in to stand up for my teammate, or somebody hits me the wrong way and, you know, I'm sticking up for myself. Or even sometimes just off the face off, you know. I mean, one of my fights in New York against he was a buddy of mine. He played on the USA teams, Dan Hynote. You know, it was a 1 o'clock ABC game in New York and against Colorado, and we're beating them 3-1, I think. And Hynote, you know, he's just trying to do his job. It says, you know, Danny, we got to go. And I'm like, where are we going? You know, but, you know, he tries to jump me off the face off, and I didn't appreciate that. But, you know, I end up beating him down. And, but I like those kind of fights, you know, not knowing that I have to go all day or the night before, or all day knowing I got to fight somebody the next night, you know. That took the enjoyment out of the game for me, you know.
But, Ed, what? Oh, go ahead, Dan.
No, I was going to say, like, you know, the year in Pittsburgh, I mean, you know, that was the same year I played all 82 games. And, you know, I got to play on, you know, Mario Lemieux's line for almost a month. And, you know, but if I wasn't on his line, I was on the third line with Primo. And, you know, I played a lot of minutes that year. And but I also had 13 fights. And, you know, I loved it. You know, because they were like spare the moment fights, you know, sticking up for my teammates or, you know, maybe like a guy tied on me asking me to go. But like they were spare the moment fights. And, you know, and, you know, I like that part of the game.
Ed, question for Dan.
Dan, who is your favorite guy to watch play? You know, whether you are on the bench, you're out on the ice, and you were just like, man, that dude's badass, you know.
Lemieux, hands down. You know, I mean, I had two posters on my wall as a kid. One was Cam Neely, and the other one was Mary Lemieux. And those are the two guys I looked up to, who I wanted to be like. You know, had Lemieux not come in 4 years after Gretzky, had he not had the back issues and Hodgkin's disease and retired there for, you know, 3 or 4 years, he would have shattered every record. Watching that guy, you know, I mean, you know, when I got traded there, that was Yager's last year, and we went to the semifinals and lost to Jersey. But, you know, we had like every ABC game, and I remember we were at home against St. Louis, and Dallas Drake was on that team at that time, and we fought that game too. But I just remember Lemieux coming down. The ice wasn't the greatest. And he was basically like bouncing the puck down the ice like a basketball. A 2-on-1 with Yager. And he basically batted it over to Yager in midair. And Yager scored. And I just remember watching that. I'll never forget that. The ice was like terrible. I think it was really hot out. It was towards the end of the period, so the ice was already shitty. And coming out of our zone, he basically just down the ice. And I was like, holy shit.
I have another question to follow up with you, Dan, too.
Well, I just wanted to share with just one more thing about I just remember obviously being there like that next year, and you know, obviously getting to know Lemieux more, but and then hearing like how like the different reporters give him a hard time about, hey, why do you try to score off the faceoff sometimes? Like, you know, that's like virtually impossible. But him being who he is, when you know it, he did it. He did it that year. Like, and like the frigging guy, he wanted to do, he did. I mean, he was that good. And so when I was on his line, it was like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. Like on the breakout, I was on my off wing. If I don't get the puck to 66 coming up the middle, I know, like, I'm not even going to Wilkes-Barre. I'm going to the Russian front. Like, all right, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's a great story. I'm glad you continued it. Now, I got to ask you, you know, how tough was it to play against Scott Stevens? Because he was, you know, really just tough as nails back when we played, and you know, really big physical presence back in the day. And, you know, was he or was a couple other defensemen that you played against just really just real good physical presence, just good solid defensemen as well?
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely a guy that made sure you kept your head up. Like, you were aware of where the hell he was or where he was coming from. So, like, when you're coming to the neutral zone, like, you made sure, like, you – like, where, you know, one, you knew if he was on the ice or not. And two, if you're coming through the neutral zone, you're getting the puck, you're making sure that he's not coming, or you're getting the puck and, like, you're stopping and looking for someone coming because you don't want to keep receiving it if he's coming your way. You know, because you've seen that tape too many times. So, but, and then, you know, there were other guys like, you know, Philadelphia had like, you know, they had a whole bunch of guys like Therrien and, you know, Hatcher. I mean, they had a whole bunch of guys back there that, you know, were big dudes. And, you know, then, you know, you had guys like Rob Blake and, you know, a guy like Brian Marchment. I mean, another guy, God rest his soul. I mean, but he was another guy that had no problem coming through the middle to take your head off. None, you know. You know, his son plays that way too. So,
Dan, I got to ask you about when it was all done with the NHL and you had to transition into civilian life. Was it tough, that transition at first, or?
Yeah, it's still tough today. I mean, I still feel like if I get myself back in shape, I can go out and play even though I'm 48. And, you know, I don't feel 48. And, but, yeah, it was really, really hard because I stopped way sooner than I should have, you know. I just had too many concussions. You know, I had two kids. And, you know, I was over in Norway and I just broken my neck in practice. And, you know, if I didn't have two kids, I would have kept on playing and clawed my way back because my main goal was to claw my way back to the NHL because that's where I knew I belonged. And, but, you know, I stopped playing because of my kids, you know, I wanted them to be back home and, you know, go down the street and catch, you know, the bus to school. And, you know, and I wanted to like somewhat be able to save whatever was left, you know, of whatever was going on in my head, you know? So that's why I stopped, you know, I stopped at basically age 33 or 34 and, you know, I never officially retired, but obviously I'm retired and, you know, but it was, I went through dark times up until, I don't know, maybe just a few years ago, you know, you know, it wasn't until I, you know, started taking certain medicine to really help, you know, balance me out, you know, to just make me even keel and kind of like basically like seduce me, you know? You know, cause I just get so angry, you know? You know, obviously a lot of that has to do with the concussions, you know, but I'd just be so angry and like depressed and sour. Cause I didn't, you know, I didn't go out of the game the way I, you know, on my own terms. And, you know, it was hard for me to be around the game. I mean, I'm only around the game now because of my son, you know, but, you know, being involved with the Bruins alumni, you know, it's certainly helped me get back into the game. And, you know, but I couldn't watch hockey. The only time I'd go to a Bruins game is if, you know, only to take my son, only for him. And so, you know, get tickets to the Bruins alumni suite. And, but I'm strictly there just for him, you know? You know, but now, you know, it's better now. I mean, I watch playoff hockey, you know, and the only time I, you know, during the season, if I watch hockey is if I take my son to a Bruins game, but it's still hard, you know, it's still hard, but, you know, I get enjoyment out of watching my son. You know, when I go to the rink and I watch him play and watching him come along and how much he's improving. And, you know, he just finished eighth grade today and he's almost the same height as me now and kid's a player. And, you know, I get a lot of enjoyment out of watching him. So,
Dan, your son is 2011?
He's a 2010.
2010. Okay. My son's a 2011. So, yeah. But I know a lot of the teams that you mentioned, the Breakers, and my daughter plays for the Spitfires, and my son had a couple stints with the Bridgewater Bandits. So we swim in the same pool sometimes.
Yes, we do. The hockey world, as everybody says, is a very, very small world.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you're talking club teams, because then you can go wherever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom, question for Dan.
Yeah, who do you think was the most underrated player you ever played with?
Oof, underrated. Jeez. Well,
get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
I mean, when I was at Pittsburgh, you know, I could say like a guy like Alexei Kovalev, because obviously, like, you know, Yager and, you know, Lemieux were getting all the limelight. And I mean, I've never seen anybody in my entire life handle the puck like that guy. It's almost like he had a button on his hockey stick. You know, like the puck was on his stick and it was like the puck wasn't coming off until he decided it was coming off of his stick. I mean, he was like a magician with that puck. He could dangle in a phone booth. I mean, it was impressive. I mean, he was unbelievable. And he was a game changer, you know. You know, I got to play with I mean, I wouldn't say he's underrated, but I mean, because obviously he's a Hall of Famer or a future Hall of Famer, but I got to play with him for a little bit. But, you know, a guy like Joe Thornton, you know, reminded me a lot of like a guy like Lemieux, you know. Joe just had that, like, even though he was younger than me, he just had that, like, that presence, you know, about him in the locker room, you know. The way he carried himself and that leadership. You know, I was really bummed out he got traded, you know. You know, I really thought he was great for Boston. I thought he was a great leader in the locker room. But I know you caught me off guard there with that question. So sorry. I don't know. I actually haven't really thought of that too much, but I don't know. If I think of it, I'll come back to it.
All right. Ed, question for Dan.
Dan, I believe that you spent 1 year at BU. How'd you enjoy your college experience there?
Yeah, it was great. You know, we won everything but the final game, you know. We won the Beanpot, we won Hockey East, we upset Michigan that year. I mean, they had, you know, they had Morrison, they had Turco and Net, Botterill. They had a full boat that year. And, we lost North Dakota in the finals, and it was probably Chris Drury and Chris Keller's, worst college game ever that they, you know, they just had a bad second period. And, we ended up losing, I think, 5-4. And, you know, I know Jack Parker wanted me back, for my sophomore year. And, you know, maybe in hindsight, I should have, you know, especially the way I look at, you know, the way things are now, you know, I probably should have came back for my sophomore year because the Final Four was in Boston that year. And, so, I know, it's kind of one of those, you know, what is it, should have, you know, but it's just tough, you know, and, you know, the Islanders had offered first, you know, basically, you know, like top five money to my agent. And then, you know, it was gone a week later. And I know how that conversation went between Mike Milbury and Jack Parker. You know, Jack probably asked him what the likelihood of me playing in Long Island was that next year. And Mike probably said, not good. So Jack said, you know, let me have him back for one more year. And so that $900,000 signing bonus and that first round money was gone. So I said, all right, well, two could play that game. And so I notified BU and the Islanders I was going to Seattle as an overage because Seattle had my rights. So, you know, I was just really sour that, you know, I mean, that's someone's livelihood. I mean, it's a lot of money. I mean, you know, I came from a dad that made, you know, $30,000-$35,000 a year as a teacher, you know, four kids, and, you know, that was just a lot of money. So that's when I got traded from the Islanders to Edmonton. And but I had a great college experience, you know. You know, I mean, it would have been great to go back. You know, we probably would have won it my sophomore year. And, when I go up to BU or in that building, you know, you see guys who stayed, you know, they're All-American. And, you know, I didn't get those accolades by not staying, you know. I didn't get my name up there or get my jersey retired because I didn't stay there for the 3 or 4 years to rack up, you know. I mean, I had great numbers my freshman year, as you know. I loved it. BU is a great school and great program.
Dan, I got to ask you, funniest guy you ever were around in your NHL career?
Oh, Mark Bergevin, hands down. Mark Bergevin. Holy shit. You talk about a guy who was a character. That guy, the funniest guy ever. I mean, I know he was the general manager in Montreal, but like, he was the funniest guy. Anybody who's ever played with him will say the same thing.
Snappy dresser too.
Yeah. But he would put the blue hot pack wrap you put on, you know, like when you put a hot pack on and you put that Velcro blue around to keep the hot pack on you. He would wear that around his junk. Right. And he'd like, so you come in for like morning skate and like Berge would be pole dancing. like at a strip club. Like, that's the shit he would do. And then, like, he, like, on the plane, he'd come through with a basket. I think for the guy's keys, I forget what the basket was for. Maybe their phones, but he'd come like with his glasses all cockeyed, because if we just had a bad landing, you know, like, so like it'd be like a message to like the pilot and to the stewardess is like, hey, get your shit together, you know, like, but like he'd walk onto the bus that way, and Craig Patrick would like, he'd always have everybody laughing, like he was definitely there to keep, you know, Mario entertained. I mean, he was always, you know, he was at the end of his career, but he was there to keep Mario but, you know, the locker room needed a guy like that. And
I think you should call him and out him for a job.
He, you know, we had my son's team up there for a tournament one winter, maybe back in 2016 or 2017. And I got a hold of his secretary and told him that, you know, I had my team there, and he left passes for all the kids and the parents to come down afterwards so that they could, like, come down and, like, see the players outside the locker room. And, yeah, it was, and I got to see him, and it was really good to catch up with him again. But, you know, like I told him, I'm like, it's so hard to take you serious in this position right now. You know, and he started laughing. I'm like, I'm like, I honestly, Burge, I'm like, I can't take you serious as a general manager.
Tom, question for Dan before we wrap it up. One last one.
Yeah, but this is just a kind of a fun one. Would you rather win a Stanley Cup as a fourth liner or be a star on a team that never makes it?
Oh man, I don't know if that's fun. That's. That's hard, because my whole career, all I wanted to do was be able to just be allowed to play, you know? But obviously we all play the game to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's like, I don't know. That's a hard question. I mean, because obviously, you know, I didn't win a cup, and you know, as a kid, everybody wants to win the Stanley Cup, you know. But you know, for me, like, my Stanley Cup was playing with my idol, you know, Mario Lemieux, and playing on the same line as him, you know. You know, that's the satisfaction I take out of my career. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that, because my whole career, I just wanted to be allowed to be, just mm-hmm. to be allowed to play, you know? And, you know, obviously I'd love to be, you know, I played on the fourth line on certain teams, and, you know, I'd love to do my role and help the team win a Stanley Cup too, you know? Yep. And, you know, there's honor in that as well, you know? So that's hard, you know, because I'm sure every fourth liner will tell you that they would love to play, you know, but yeah. I'm sure most guys would say they'd win the Stanley Cup, but you know, I love the game of hockey, and I wanted to be able to play. So
and
that's my answer.
One last question for Dan before we let him go.
Dan, I believe that you and your brothers and your dad still have the hockey school. Is that correct?
Well, my dad started the West Suburban Hockey School way back when. You know, like a guy like Pierre McGuire was there, Tim Taylor. But, you know, my second oldest brother has had a hockey school for a long time. I've never had my own hockey school, but I've helped with their, you know, their hockey schools, you know, but no, that hasn't been in effect in a few years, but, okay. But you know, my son's constantly asking me to do one, but you know, I have my own business here on Cape Cod, and, you know, this is my busy time of year, and this is also when the hockey camps are also busy, you know.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, it's something I'm thinking about doing, though.
Okay. You know? And then just to kind of tie in with that, what would you tell hockey parents now to tell their kids as they're kind of going up through the, through all these tournaments and all these travel teams and everything like that? You know, would you tell them, you know, make sure that you keep fun as kind of the primary focus until we get a little bit older, closer to 17? What would you say to a parent, like, unsolicited advice?
Like, back the heck off your kid. Like, let your kid, let your son and daughter, like, have fun. Like, don't make them think it's, you know, do or die or make or break if, you know, that it's, you know, NHL or nothing, you know? Like, I just hear too many parents, like, you know, it's NHL this, NHL that. Like, it's disgusting, you know? It's disturbing. You know, my parents never did that to me. You know, certainly, you know, even my dad wasn't at one of my games, you know, my mom would tell me, you know, I don't, you know, you just, you know, you didn't play good that game, you know, like, what, you know, you just, it didn't look like you tried, or like, you weren't playing Danny hockey. And, but, you know, I let my son play. I never make him feel bad. You know, if I see something that he didn't do right, I'll point it out, but I never make him feel bad. I never yell at him. You know, and, you know, let the kids just have fun, you know, let them get there on their own. Like, my son, when he was with the Breakers, like, at the end of the game, you know, I'm the coach. You know, he wasn't one of my six guys. You know, if we're down by a goal, we pulled the goalie, he wasn't one of my six guys out there. You know, now he would be, because he's gone like this at his speed. You know, you want the kids to want it on their own. You can't have the parents want it for you. You know, you want the kids to want it, because that's where they become better. You know, so that's my advice.
Dan, I got to ask you before we wrap it up. So people that are really hockey fans, or people that want to reach out maybe to write for, you know, a picture signed or get in contact with you, would they do that? How do you suggest doing that? Through Facebook or through, do you have any autograph signings coming up, or Bruins alumni skates that you're going to be at?
Yeah, I mean, they can reach out through Facebook. They, you know, I have a P.O. box if they want to mail something to. You know, the Bruins alumni, you know, doesn't resume again until October. So I'm happy to share my P.O. box. I don't know if I can share it online here, or.
Yeah,
whatever you want to do. I'm sure that there's a fan out there that'll probably come across this and want to know how to get a hold of you for maybe a card signed, or you know, 8x10, or so. How can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can do Facebook, or they can you know, just do my name to P.O. Box 92, and that's in Yarmouth, Port, Mass, 02675.
Awesome. Yeah, right. So, Dan, I know we've been a little over an hour with you, but I just want to say that from the guys and us, I mean, thanks. Thank you for coming on and talking about the whole NHL career, talking about fun stories, things that you remember. And, you know, maybe we can have you back on again eventually and maybe do a collab with some of the other guys all together. That's what I'd like to do. And have you come back. Friend of the show, I must say.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate it. And, you know, I'm honored that you guys had me on. And, you know, it's always great to talk about stories from the past. And, yeah, I really, you know, I appreciate it. This was fun. So anytime you guys want me back on, just let me know.
Yeah, Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. We all reach out this week and let you know when we're going to post it, and we'll go from there.
All right. It's great. Great meeting you guys.
Dude, Dan, thanks for your time. Appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Bye. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Four seasons greetings to you all.